All you have to do is just ask.
Just want to clap for that story. It's been amazing to hear what God's been doing in our church family. So, good morning. My name is Paul. I'm really glad that you're here with us today. I am a church planting intern here with Hoboken Grace. And as Wayne said a little bit earlier, feel free to grab some more food and coffee and bagels and everything else there in the back. It's available there for you. And so, if this is your first time with us, you're coming at a really good time because last week we just started a new series and it's called What If? Right? And you might think, okay, well, what if? Maybe you're an ambitious person, you're someone who's more driven. That's probably what led you to being in this area here near New York City. But it's not the what ifs of our career or our life's ambition. We're actually thinking about the what if of what we when we look around our city. Because last week we started this question that what if we look around our city and the people in our lives and we have a heightened sensitivity to the brokenness and the problems that we see, right? And when we see those problems, when we see those situations, we ask what if with those situations. Not with our own life ambitions, but actually as we see the stories and we see the headlines, the craziness that's happening in the world and in our city, you just kind of wonder, you know, this is not how it's supposed to be. And so we don't want to just stop there, but wonder, okay, well, what if God would use me to be a part of that restoration? So that's what we're walking through. And last week, we were sent out with two questions, right? We were sent out with one, what is the problem that God has put on your heart for your city? And then the second one was, is your God big enough to solve that problem, right? The first one, what's the problem that God's put on your city, on your heart for your city? Then secondly, is your God big enough to restore in that problem? And so we want to try something new. Wayne mentioned about the online program. We want to kind of have an interaction here. Can you pull out your phone and go ahead and go to the online program? Don't be shy. I know usually you don't pull out your phone in church like this. But go ahead and grab it. Go to the online program, which is hobokengrace.info. And when you get into the Hamilton Park location, there's a tab there. There's a section there called My Problem. We want to know what's on your heart. Right, we asked you last week, we want to give you a chance to actually give us feedback as to what the problem is that you are seeing. And we'll actually take a second a little bit later on in the service to kind of look through there and see what's on our heart as a family. Because honestly, that's what we want. We want this to be a conversation within our church family, that we're not people that turn a blind eye to all the craziness and the madness that's happening in the world or in our city, but we actually are people that ask this question honestly, like, what is the problems that I'm seeing and what can I do about it? Because the fact is, I bet that there's some of you here that once I told you, you know, pull out your cell phone, answer the question, you knew exactly what the problem was. Like, you knew, okay, I know exactly what I'm gonna write, and here's how I'm gonna put it. Others of you, maybe you're not as sure, right? That kind of happened in my dinner group. We were talking about this this past Wednesday because we asked the question, okay, what's the problem that you see in your city? And some of us kind of looked at each other, I don't know. I'm not really sure. And it kind of challenged us, you know, maybe we should open our eyes and see, maybe there is something that I'm not realizing, right? What maybe in my heart breaks for things that I experience, but I never really feel anything for what's going on in the world or, you know, in the city. And so that's why it's so important for this to be a conversation, that we would hear what's going on with the people sitting next to you here. Or I'm hoping that it would be a normal conversation as we hang out throughout the week or as we eat together, that this is what church would look like. I remember when I walked home from dinner group, it made me think, you know what, this is what we should be doing. This should be part of our conversation. As we see things happening, things that are not how they're supposed to be, that we would ask ourselves, you know, God, what would it be to impact this situation? What would it be for me to be included in your plans? And so I'm thankful, I'm grateful that very grateful that we can start the conversation together and ask ourselves that question. But as you all know, talking is good, but if we just talked about it and we didn't take steps towards a solution, then it really doesn't go anywhere. And so talking about it is one thing, but taking steps towards actually doing something is a whole new ball game. Because sometimes we can talk about the problems and we see what's going on in the world or in Jersey City, and we can discuss about different things and we get an idea of maybe this is something that we can do as a solution. Maybe this is what God would have for us. And it's this great idea that sits there, and then time passes. And then before you know it, we're settling. We end up accepting the problem just for what it is. You know, it made me think about several years ago. I worked on the church as a youth pastor, which means I was dealing with high school students all the time, right? Trying to invest in them, trying to pour into them. And something that I would see, and I'm sure you can all relate, that teenagers sometimes make bad decisions. Yeah. I hope you can relate with that. I can. So I would see kids, you know, they would get caught up in a destructive relationship, or they would get lost in the world of partying and alcohol, kind of like an Aaron story, or they just kind of go through life with no direction. They're just kind of living and completely distracted with all the stuff in the world. So that was kind of normal, and you would expect that with teenagers, right? But then the part that really, that broke my heart, that I struggled with, because sometimes I would see a kid, you know, just completely self-destructing, making bad choice after bad choice, causing harm for himself and for the people around him. But then I would see the people closest to him, and they wouldn't be doing anything about it. It's as if they, you know what? They just accepted it that he is now, yeah, he is self-destructing, and they would do nothing about it. It's really tough for me to see. And you might tell me, yeah, you know, that's teenagers. You know, how are they supposed to know any better? Like when a teenager sees his friend kind of messing around, what is he supposed to do? Sure, okay, that's fine. But, well, then what about us? Are we going to be people that when we see a problem, that we just accept it? Or are we going to be the ones that ask, what if? What if this thing that is such a mess wouldn't look like this anymore? What if God is truly a God of restoration? What would happen? What could be? And so I believe that God has called us not only to talk about this and to have a conversation, but really dream and wonder of what could be in our neighborhoods, in our families, in our workplace, in this city of Jersey City. And last week, we looked at a man named Nehemiah from the Bible who kind of encountered the same thing. He saw a problem, right? But it was an overwhelming, huge problem, right? His heart was broken, but he didn't just let it move. He didn't just move on with his life. He didn't just settle and accept it. He immediately addressed it with God, right? He's not someone that just let it linger there, but he said, you know what? This is not how it's supposed to be. I'm not going to let it overwhelm me, although it was an overwhelming thing, but instead we see that it fueled him to action. And so we want to learn from this man, Nehemiah, and just learn a little bit more about his story. And so before we jump into the story, I want to give you just a little bit of background information, right? So Nehemiah is a book in the Old Testament, and in the Old Testament, the way that God worked was he had a special, unique relationship with the nation of Israel. And so what we're picking up here in Nehemiah, the nation of Israel is just destroyed. They're overrun by foreign nations. Their temples destroyed, and all this stuff that they've built up has been overrun. And we see that the Jewish people are kind of scattered all over the place. They're exiled. They're scattered here and there. And Nehemiah, in the midst of all those people scattered, is one of those men. And we see him, what his job is. He is the cupbearer to a king. And if you don't know what a cupbearer is, literally, he is the guy that works in the king's court. And he tastes the king's wine and food before the king eats it, so to make sure that it's not poisoned. So literally, we heard last week, I mean, he eats for a living. As long as it's not poisoned, I guess it's not too bad. But that's what his job is. And so we see this man, he hears the story of his hometown, his home city, just in complete ruin, and it breaks his heart. A cupbearer, right? What does he have to do with it? He has no training towards fixing anything. But he didn't just let it linger. He wanted to address it. And so he begins to dream, what if? So he prays to God and asks God for help. And then several months later, we'll see what happened. We're going to pick up right here in Nehemiah chapter 2. And so pretty much he heard the news in November of his hometown being destroyed, where his roots are being destroyed. And then here we pick up in around March. It says in verse 1, early the following spring, in the month of Nisan, during the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was serving the king his wine. So here's Nehemiah doing his job. I had never before appeared sad in his presence. So the king asked me, why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Why is he looking sad? And so then look, then I was terrified. Nehemiah was terrified. Think about it. You imagine yourself. You're before the king. You're a cupbearer. You work in the king's court. You're kind of a lowly position. You don't really do anything other than make sure he doesn't get poisoned. And you're letting your emotion out to the king. You don't do that. The king has king problems. He doesn't have to worry about his lowly king's court people bringing him the problems. This is a dangerous position to be. The king might just do something kind of wild and like get out of here or something more violent. So he's terrified because of that. He's a dangerous position. But also, I think he's terrified because of what he's about to say. So let's look. He comes really humbly. He says, "Long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins, and the gates have been destroyed by fire." The king asked, "Well, how can I help you?" That's a good sign. "With a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied, 'If it please the king, and if you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried.' The king and the queen sitting beside him asked, 'How long will you be gone? When will you return?' After I told him how long I would be gone, the king agreed to my request. And then he wasn't done yet. He said, 'I also said to the king, if it please the king, let me have letters addressed to the governors of the province west of the Euphrates River, instructed them to let me travel safely through their territories on my way to Judah. And please give me a letter to Asaph, the manager of the king's forest, instructing him to give me timber. I will need it to make beams for the gates of the temple fortress, for the city walls, and for a house for myself.' And the king granted these requests because the gracious hand of God was on me." So what just happened? All right, so here's Nehemiah. He hears the news of Jerusalem being destroyed and the temple being in ruins and breaks his heart. He starts to pray and ask God, okay, what can we do? What if? What would happen if we started to take towards a solution? And so several months later, an opportunity opens up because he looks sad before the king. And look, the king said, right, in the verse, "Why are you sad? You've never looked sad before. You're not sick. What's going on?" So he's been sad since he first heard the news, but I guess he's been hiding it really well. I don't know why he hasn't looked sad. Or maybe someone said, "Well, it's been the winter. Maybe the king's not drinking as much wine, so they're not in front of each other as much." Or other people might say that, "Well, maybe he was strategic, Nehemiah. He was strategic, and he let a little bit of an emotion out so as to kind of draw out an opportunity for the king to help him out." But whatever the reason, it's important to notice that when the opportunity opened itself, Nehemiah was ready. I don't think he just thought of all these things right on the spot, unless he's just really sharp. But it's several months has passed, and it's as if he had been dreaming and planning on how to address the problem. Look at what the passage says. It says in verse 6, the king with the queen sitting beside him asked, "How long will you be gone?" That's a pretty important question, because Nehemiah pretty much gave his notice. Like, "Hey, king, whatever, you need to get a new cupbearer, because I'm asking if I can leave." But Nehemiah had an answer. He said, "You know what? I'm going to be gone for this amount of time, and I'm going to ask you that I can go back to Judah to rebuild the city. Oh, and by the way, if you can give me letters, because I'm going to travel through this territory, and I want to travel safely, and while you have your pen out, can I get another letter to the director of forestry so I can get some timber to bring with me, because I need it for the temple fortress. I need to rebuild the beams there and the walls. And by the way, king, I want to build a house for myself, so I need all this stuff with me." Unless he's really sharp and he just thought about it right then and there, maybe, but I don't think so. He had been dreaming about this. When he encountered the problem, he started having a conversation with God about it. He didn't just accept the problem, but he started to wonder, okay, if this is going to happen, how long will I be gone? If I'm going to be involved, what's the territory I'm going to travel through? And that's going to be dangerous, so what do I need to make sure that I'm going to be safe? Okay, by the way, when I'm there, where will I live? Maybe I should build a house for myself. He really got into it deep, dreaming and wondering, strategically planning what could be. What if God is truly a God of restoration? It's as if he was praying, "God, if you are a God of restoration and you are passionate and you are real about your promises and you're faithful, then what would this look like?" He didn't just sit and let the problem linger. He began to dream. So I wonder for us today, you know, we talked about this thing. Some of you answered the question. We'll go through that in a little bit. You know, the problems that we see, what would that look like for us if we dreamed like Nehemiah dreamt? Because here's a question for all of us to think about. Have you allowed yourself to dream with God? In the same way that we see Nehemiah, months pass and he's got all these answers in place and he doesn't just leave it nebulous. He's actually getting into the feasibility and logistics of what's going on, just dreaming. He doesn't know, but he's just dreaming, imagining what could be. I think that God desires for us to be that kind of people. People that encounter problems and hear about problems and see things, and then we begin to dream and hope of what could be. Because God is passionate. God created this world. He created you and me. And he's passionate about his creation, especially people. You heard Wayne say it a little bit earlier in silence. We hear it every week. He's pursuing you. No matter who you are, what you've done, he's pursuing you. He has pursued you. He continues to pursue you. And he's so passionate about people that he sent his son, Jesus, to pay the debt that we couldn't pay. Right? Because by ourselves, left to ourselves, we're separate, we're broken, we can't come before God. But because of Jesus, we have the opportunity to have a relationship with God. Not only that, we can have a relationship with him, but also we can dream with him and join him in what he's doing. Because he's passionate. He's more passionate about his creation than we realize. He's more passionate about Jersey City and Hudson County and this area, the metro New York area, than we realize. And we have the opportunity to join him in that. And, you know, obviously Nehemiah had this problem way back then. And even stretching into the New Testament with the early church and what they experienced. I mean, they experienced some crazy problems. They experienced rejection, imprisonment, confiscation of property, and all these things. But there's several letters in the New Testament that are trying to encourage them and let them know, you know what? You need to hold on because God is who he says he is. There's a verse here in the book of Hebrews where it says, we are not those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved. We are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved. I think the way that God desires for us to be is when we see these problems, not that we would settle, not that we would just be overwhelmed, so overwhelmed by the task that we would not do anything, but in confidence in who God is, that we would push forward with him. We are not of those who shrink back. And the author continues on in the book of Hebrews, in this letter that is being written, and he continues to give out a whole list of heroes in the scriptures, of people that were like Nehemiah, holding on to faith and seeing what was not there, people that dreamed with God, believed and trusted and had faith that God is who he says he is, that God is a God of restoration. You know, it's great to hear stories of Nehemiah in the Old Testament and people in the early church and everything, but I mean, what about today? So I can hear all the stories, I can keep talking about it, and it's cool and it's real, but for me, I don't know if you're like me, sometimes I just want to see, okay, what does this look like now? Someone who's dreaming and wondering about how it could be, because I think one of the greatest things that God has ever given us is this gift of imagination. Imagine, like, this ability to dream is really powerful. And if you don't think so, just hang out a little bit after the service and just watch the kids running around in a circle in their own world over there. And it's like an amazing thing that they would ever see. I was talking to my wife, Hazel, about it this week. And I was telling her my two go-to toys growing up were not actual toys. First was a curtain rod, because that's a sword. And then the second one is a bin, you know, a bin for clothes, because I wasn't a box kid. I like to sit in a bin because I can still watch TV and see through the holes and everything. But that's what it was. I had a sword and had a car because of our imagination, right? And you think, why did God give us this imagination other than just being silly little kids? Maybe a part of it is so that we can imagine and see what's not yet there. Because dreaming, especially dreaming with God, can really be powerful as to what the possibilities are. You know, one of the reasons why Hazel and I moved back to Jersey City last year was because we were dreaming. We were initially we got married, we lived in a suburb in Bergen County, and we began to wonder and think, okay, what can happen if we just join God? What if we jumped in what God was doing? And so we had a background working with high school ministry, and when we came to Jersey City, that same heart kind of just came with us. You know, and so whenever now when I hear the headlines or when I hear just stories of teenagers getting caught up in a mess, especially in Jersey City. It breaks my heart. Causing destruction for themselves and causing harm for other people. It's really, really tough. It's a conversation that I've begun to have with God, wondering, you know, what could be? What if? And not just the what if of, what if these teenagers would stop getting themselves caught up in a mess, but beyond that, what if these youth, these high school kids and their families would actually gather together and come to know God and then join God on his mission? What would the city look like? You know, it's really something that I've really wondered. We think about when we started this Hamilton Park location and the people that I've come to interact with. You know, there's a lot of people, I saw this morning when the teams were setting up, we have a lot of solutions-minded people in this space here. People that, you know what, we got to get something done, we're going to get it done. Right? What would happen if all of us kind of turned and joined God and lined up with him and, you know what, we got to get some stuff done here in Jersey City. It's amazing to dream of what could be. You know, I want to share a video clip with you here. Last week, there's a guy within our church family. He lives, he goes to the Uptown Hoboken location, and he lives in Union City, and he's started to dream and started to take steps towards dreaming with God. So I want to let you show this video. It's our lead pastor, Chris High, interviewing John Paul. So let's take a look at it.
So John Paul, give us a little bit of an introduction into who you are, how you got to where you are as a teacher in Union City.
I'd say I was born and raised in Union City. Lived there up to the age of 16, and then things got kind of rough in the neighborhood. So my parents wanted us to move. We moved to Patterson. It didn't get much better over there, let's be honest. And then from there, I got a blessing to play basketball. Started playing end of high school. I got to play at a small college, Montclair State University. And then from there, I was blessed and got to play in the NBA with the LA Clippers organization. But it was during summer league of that time, at the end of summer league when it was time to sign the contracts, where I just felt in my heart that I couldn't be a professional basketball player as a career. And I remember sitting on Venice Beach and calling up my agent and telling him that, you know, I can't do this. I really love working with youth. I love working with young people, and I want to do that. And he's like, oh, that's great. You know, we'll set up a foundation, and there'll be great people. I'll take care of that for you. And I said, no, you know, the biggest thing that impacted my life wasn't just watching, you know, highlights on YouTube of a player or buying their jersey at Sports Authority. It was people who were actually there in my life every single day. And so I want to be that. And so I came back to Union City and had the privilege of, you know, getting to work with youth. And I figured, where are they most? 8 hours a day, they're in school. So why not become a public school teacher?
That's awesome. And yeah. And then as you step into teaching, something happens in Union City which kind of prompts you to begin what will eventually be called Flight Club.
You know, I love Union City. You know, it's awesome being there. But as a teacher, when I came back, they had done something where they combined two high schools into one high school. And if you ever drive by Kennedy Boulevard over on 25th Street, you'll see this beautiful building on the right-hand side. I mean, they even have the football field on the roof of the building, three stories up. It's awesome. But when you combine two high schools into one, you take two football teams, and now you only have one, which means you have 70 kids that used to be on a team that now have nothing to do. You take two basketball teams, combine them to one, that's 30 kids. You go down the line, you have a couple hundred kids with nothing to do that once felt purpose, that once felt a sense of family and belonging. And I started to see that, and then I also saw the gang enrollment increase as well, because they just wanted that family. They wanted that sense that someone wanted them. And so what I did just to, you know, try to stem the problem was figuring all these kids are getting cut. They want to be faster. They want to be stronger. They want to be bigger. So I started putting flyers up around school. You know, do you want to run faster? Do you want to get stronger? Do you want to jump higher? And 80-something kids show up the first day in my classroom after school saying, what's this about? And I said, all right, we'll just do push-ups. And did push-ups and didn't fit in the classroom anymore, so went down the hallway and then bought sandbags from Home Depot for $3, and they started running up and down the stairs with sandbags on their, you know, on their shoulders. And then girls wanted to join it, and so we allowed the girls to be a part of it and started kickboxing for girls to learn self-defense, but then also self-esteem. And it just started becoming bigger and bigger and just blossoming into something really beautiful that God was doing.
And it started just in the classroom, right? You were just using what you had in the classroom, and then it kind of expanded out across school.
Yeah, it was amazing how it went starting in the classroom and then the hallway, and then before you know it, we had a great superintendent, and he saw the program and its potential and what was happening to the kids as they were gaining this confidence and staying off the streets. And so he asked us to be in all the middle schools and the high schools in Union City. And so we were able to start those programs, satellite programs, all throughout the district, which is really great to see.
And then now you're kind of taking the next step, asking this question, what if, and dreaming. So what are you working towards now?
Well, you know, just like you said, you know, when God puts something in your heart, you know, you feel you gotta go forward with it. And so I've kind of put my job to the side a little bit.
He quit his job, that's what he's saying.
That's, yeah. And pursuing this full time. And so we found a location in the middle of the city. And one of the interesting things about Union City is it's 70,000 people in about 1 square mile. Basically, it's the most populated city per square mile in the whole entire United States. But there's never been a YMCA, and there's never been a Boys and Girls Club. And instead of, you know, asking, hey, why isn't there one, we said, why don't we make one? You know, why don't we make a place not just where kids can go to hang out, but where there can be a dedication to excellence, not just physically, but also through character development and through academics. And that's what our goal is this year, as soon as possible, is to build this center and to give them a place where they can go. And we're going to call the center the Hope and Future Center, because we truly believe that when you have a hope, then you truly can see the future God has for you.
And so, yeah, isn't that... As I said, I met John Paul a couple months ago as he became part of our family and started getting connected here and hearing the story of what God was doing. And for those of you who've been with us throughout the year, you know that one of our major focuses this year is mobilize and looking at, okay, how can God use us in greater ways throughout our city and our surrounding communities? And so we came alongside of John Paul, and it was about a month ago that we formalized our partnership. And so Hoboken Grace is now a financial partner in Hope and Future and getting this thing launched. I know sometimes you guys wonder, you know, when I give, where does it go? This is one of those things that we're able to come alongside of and to be able to give to, which we're really, really excited about. I'm really excited about the potential of this. But then I also know that for some of you, not only are you giving here, but then in addition, for some of you, you kind of look for opportunities like this to be able to give above and beyond and to be able to make something like this become a reality. And so I wanted to bring this to your attention. Currently, the Hope and Future Center has raised about 30,000 of the necessary 50 to be able to get going and to make sure that this is able to be provided throughout that first year. And so for some of you, if they're interested in coming alongside of you in that way, what's the website? How can, and they can give on the website, right? And to be able to make that. And it's a 501c3 fully charitable organization.
Yeah, it's www.hope-future.us. That's the website where you can go. You can find out more information. We had one of the artists in the area wanted to do a documentary about it because he was so inspired. You can watch a short video in the About section. And even besides that, I mean, you know, if anyone even feels God has given them talent and physical abilities and always want to use it, you know, we got 7th and 8th graders trying to learn how to do, you know, kettlebell swings, but we don't have kettlebells, we use cinder blocks, they're cheaper, but they're getting a workout and they're feeling good about themselves. Is that something that you feel inspired to do? You know, you're great at CrossFit and you always want to be able to train, you know, maybe someone in freshman high school alongside. We're definitely open to that too, and it's just a blessing to be able to be a part of it.
Yeah, and after the service, John Paul will be out front here so you can connect with him and ask questions. But it may be one of those opportunities, maybe as you're sitting here, God's put on your heart to be able to come alongside of the Hope and Future Center and to help this become a reality. We're really excited to be working together in this, and it's one of those ways that I think God's going to be able to really open a lot of doors for us to be able to partner both financially, but then also for us to be able to get involved in kids' lives in a really, really unique way. So would you guys just celebrate John Paul and what's happening there one more time?
Just to clarify, I don't think he's here. You know, he said meet him out there. I don't think he's going to be there. Yeah, we did not shrink back from the problem. But he ran to it. You hear his story. He was about to be in the NBA and set all that aside. It's amazing. He says that his agent was like, you know, you care about kids, we can set up a foundation, but could have settled and like moved on to the NBA, but no, it wasn't enough. He wanted to follow God and have a conversation with God of what would it be if I was joining you, God, in the restoration. So we hear about Nehemiah, right? He heard the problem, and then he dreamt about it for several months, and then when the opportunity showed up, he's ready to go. You hear John Paul about how he remembered how growing up for him, it wasn't, he said, the clips on YouTube or, you know, celebrities that really built into him. It was the ones that were actually there. Left his job as an NBA, joining the NBA and became a teacher, and now he's jumped into this, dreaming of what could be. So what about for you? Will you allow yourself to dream with God? And I want to be clear, this is not, I mean, you hear John Paul, he started an organization, he's trying to make a community center, and you might think, okay, I gotta start up a new organization too, and you know, leave my job. And maybe that's the case, but I don't want you to just think only that, because it's not necessarily about doing more only, but actually, just where we are right now. If we just looked around our work in our neighborhood or in our building, and what would it be to join God there? What if God is truly a God of restoration in your family, in your workplace, on your block, here in Jersey City? What if we joined him in those things? So you might be asking, okay, I want to do that. You know, how do I get started? There's two things that we want to send you with. One is, again, the same as last week, identify that problem. But then we want you to ask yourself three questions as you have a conversation with God. And in talking with God about the problems that you're seeing and just opening up to him, you might want to ask, one, God, what would you want it to look like? Two, what would it require? And then three, what is a first step? All right, these are the questions that Nehemiah seemed to ask himself and the questions that he worked through. God, what would it look like? What would it require? And what would my first step be? So that together we can dream and join God in what he's doing here. And that's where we begin, because we're not those who shrink back, but we're here to be his church, his representatives. Because when Jesus was here on earth, he impacted people with their spirit, their physicality, and mental. He impacted people and who they were. And now we're to be his representatives, his church here. So it's our turn. And it doesn't begin with a reality. It begins with a dream. So what if we were people that didn't settle, but were so passionate about our city, so passionate about people, that we would dream with God? So much so that as we ask ourselves these questions, that when the opportunity opens up, we would be joining him full force. What if we realized we were meant for more? Will you pray with me? God, I thank you for the heart that you have for people. I thank you for the fact that you're passionate about us. You're passionate about the people in this room. That you pursued us and you continue to pursue us, and you sent Jesus so that we can be with you. Not just have that relationship with you, but in that relationship, join you in being a part of the restoration where we are now. God, I thank you that you have a heart for Jersey City, for downtown here, or whatever neighborhood we're from. God, help us to see the problems and see things as you see things, and see people as you see people. And as your heart breaks with a brokenness in our city, God, may our heart break for the brokenness. So much so that we would dream, what would it be like if we joined you in that restoration? God, help us to dream with you, we pray. In Jesus' name.